BZH 910 AM, W245 CT Hayward, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Dave Packer. A judge early today implemented a temporary limit on Elon Musk and his Department of Government Efficiency's access to the U.S. Treasury Department's taxpayer records. A hearing set for next Friday. Meanwhile,
protests against Elon Musk's sweeping role in the government breaking out across the country as Musk's team gains access to at least 10 federal agencies.
ABC News senior White House correspondent Selena Wang. The wreckage of a passenger plane that went missing in Alaska now found some 34 miles southeast of Nome in the sea ice. All 10 people on board believed to be dead. Body recovery efforts are expected to begin today. In the latest ceasefire swap, Hamas releasing a new round of hostages, three men after 15 months in captivity. Dr. Hagar Mizrahi with an Israeli hospital noting that he witnessed significant weight loss that represents the severe conditions which were endured by Hamas. This is ABC News. And theft charges. A major winter storm this week has more than a dozen states on alert as heavy snow could blanket parts of the country. ABC meteorologist Lee Goldberg has the early weekend forecast.
We have winter weather alerts from the northern Rockies all the way into the northeast. Tonight, it's the upper Midwest, maybe a few inches of snow in Minneapolis. By the time we get into tomorrow, it's the Great Lakes with some snow and a wintry mix from the Ohio Valley and the Mid-Atlantic. And then as we approach nightfall, it's along the I-95 corridor. We've got some heavy snow, the brunt of it tomorrow night, across the Hudson Valley of New York into parts of New England.
Police in the Bahamas say two women who they describe as American residents were injured in a shark attack yesterday evening. The two women were airlifted to a hospital. One of them is in serious condition, according to police. The Office of the Director of National Intelligence confirms that a plan to declassify the documents related to the assassination of President John F. Kennedy has been sent to the White House by a deadline set by the president. Dave Packer, ABC News.
I'm James Kelly with WBZH News. Your news roundup in quick podcast form. Find it anytime on the WBZH website at buzzofthenorth.com.
Matt Nair on air.
Dan Schaefer, Civic Media's political editor.
No court in the country came closer to overturning the 2020 election results than the conservative majority on the Wisconsin Supreme Court. And we have Brad Schimmel, who's been siding with January 6 rioters. So if you want your vote to count going forward, show up and vote on April 1st. Let's channel that energy into the Wisconsin Supreme Court race.
Matt Nair on air. Weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Carmelo Anthony for The Bail Project.
Bad news, you've been arrested. Good news, you're innocent until proven guilty. If you can pay your bail, good news, you go home to wait your trial. If you can't, sorry, you go to jail to wait. But sure, you still presumed innocent. But since you can't afford bail, you've lost your freedom. That's not right. And that's why The Bail Project helps those who can't afford it while fighting the in-cash bail. Because freedom should be free.
Brought to you by the Ad Council. For Civic Media News, I'm Savannah Tome Olson. All over the country, people protested the early moves of the Trump administration over the last week. That includes here in Wisconsin at the state capitol. Mike Moen reports.
Trump's return to the White House has involved a heavy dose of controversial executive orders. And access granted to wealthy advisor Elon Musk is raising legal and ethical questions as he looks to drastically cut budgets for federal agencies, or in some cases, eliminate them. Dozens of protesters gathered at designated sites in the Midwest. Organizer Kelsey Brienne said her event was a response to an attempted blitz by Trump against the government he oversees.
It's exhausting. These executive orders are not in any way normal.
Trump's moves include revoking affirmative action policies and withdrawing the U.S. from the World Health Organization. The demonstrations, billed as peaceful grassroots events, were described as frustration over the lack of influential voices trying to intervene, including Democratic leaders. However, some orders have been met with lawsuits. On his social media platform, Musk has defended his work, citing the need to cut government waste. Backlash against the right-wing policy blueprint, known as Project 2025, was another common theme at these rallies. Brienne says in Michigan, they fielded requests from many rural residents to attend. She was encouraged to hear companion protests in states with mostly rural settings, suggesting it's not an easy decision in regions where Trump is deeply popular.
You know, that takes guts, that takes courage, and right now what we need is courage.
But she says it's not easy for a lot of people to keep up with what's happening, prompting folks like her to draw attention to any actions deemed alarming. This is Mike Moen for Wisconsin News Connection. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to Civic Media News. I'm Savannah Tomei Olson.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
Northern Wisconsin weather. I'm Corey Hartman. Snow today and a few inches of accumulation. Highs near 23 degrees. For tonight, mostly cloudy, 5 below zero. Mostly sunny with highs in the mid-teens for Sunday. Mostly sunny, 17 on Monday. Mostly sunny and single digits Tuesday. Currently, 17 degrees.
Pat Kreitlow.
Pat Kreitlow is off this week, so get used to some Bach in the Dock. Greg Bach and Dr. Kristen Lyerly, Monday through Thursday.
Up North News with Pat Kreitlow, weekday mornings starting at 6. This is the Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Hey there, political orphans, swing voters, independents, that whole gang. Welcome to special edition of Lost in the Middle. We're going to do a countdown between the middle of September and work our way up till Election Day. And we've sort of switched out the format. This won't be storytelling the way we do things. But instead, what I'm doing is talking to some of the smartest political podcast hosts in the country. But before we go there, I want to tell you a quick story. When I left Congress, it was sort of running up to the 2000 election. And I got a call from a good friend of mine named Brady Williamson. And Brady said, I've got an idea for you. What's that? He said, let's try to get a political debate in Madison because it would be interesting in the 2000 election. And Brady had worked for the Clintons for years and was a Democratic operative. And I said, let's rock and roll. So we reached out to what was then called the Political Debate Commission, which everybody thought was an official arm of the federal government. But instead, it was just a cozy room between a longstanding Republican and a longstanding Democratic operative who figured out a way to make money on this. And the deal was you had to raise $500,000 because the presidential debate is a television operation. And so the first thing we had to do was raise, I don't know, I think it was $200,000 to show that we were serious, which actually was much easier than we thought it would be. We had a couple of large Madison businesses step forward, and then some foundations locally, and then we're ready to rock and roll. And then out come the folks who actually scout the presidential debate. And so we wandered around Madison looking for venues. And so the whole Madison community was geeked about the idea. And then they wanted to show off the new Madison Civic Center, which had been designed by Frank Lloyd Wright. And they walked in the room, and we probably spent maybe 3.5 minutes in it, because if you've ever seen anything designed by Frank Lloyd Wright, it may be brilliant, but it's weird. And every section we looked, there was a column or a weird thing. Walked out of that, then went to the old Oscar Mayer Theater. Yes, Madison was the home of Oscar Mayer Wieners and the Wienermobile. And they liked that a lot, but it was a really cool old building and would have great angles to look down on the audience and look very ornate and very rich. And then it turned out by the time they built out the stage downstairs, there'd be no time for sitting. So that went out the window. And so we ended up with the Madison Expo Center, which was just basically a big box. So it was a weird year because the Olympics were that fall and the World Series was really late. And so they decided at the end of the day, they're going to have to do all of the four debates, three presidential and one vice presidential, in a very compressed time frame. So we're sitting around like the NFL draft waiting for the phone to ring, and they pick up the phone and say, Brady, Scott, we've got some great news for you. Okay, we want you to host the vice presidential debate. It's like, who the hell watches the vice presidential debate, much less trying to raise $500,000 to stage it? And as we're looking through sort of depressed glasses at one another, they say, here's the date. And they pick a weekend in October in a great Wisconsin story that's not a punchline. It was the World Dairy Expo in Madison, Wisconsin. We were off the hook. You could not find a hotel room because people with trailers and pickup trucks were driving their prize Holsteins to Dane County, Wisconsin to show them off. So our prize for doing that was actually we got tickets to go to the presidential debate in Boston. Al Gore and George Bush. The highlight of the night for me personally was that Christie Brinkley sat in front of me with purple, sort of eggplant-colored leather pants. And let's just say it was not a particularly good look. But the defining moment of the debate was Al Gore doing this every time George Bush started to answer a question. And it's literally graded by historians as one of the 10 worst debate moments in U.S. presidential history. So we never ended up with the debate here, but we just all watched the debate. And I want to turn around to my guest, Andrew Heaton, who's actually calling us in from Scotland, from a phone booth in a men's businessman club, I take it is, Andrew?
I'm at the Royal Scots Club, which is just a nice, stuffy club that has allowed me to become a member. I like to work out of here, and being a humble boy from Oklahoma, I find it endlessly funny to talk to old British men in three-piece suits. So I come to Scotland to avoid the Texan weather for about a month a year, and then I work out of here.
Well, you can tell by the early introduction. So Andrew actually hosts a podcast much aligned with us called The Political Orphanage. So that means my political orphans actually live in his political orphanage when they turn into his podcast, which is terrific. Mm-hmm. He's been a stand-up comedian. He's performed at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival. He's written a bunch of books, including one that's called Laughter is Better Than Communism. And he actually opened up for William Shatner, who said, wow, that Andrew guy, he's pretty funny. But the cool thing is, and most people won't know this, and I actually know this because my youngest son spent some time in comedy, is you performed with Upright Citizens Brigade in L.A., which is sort of the West Coast version of Second City, who don't know it. So,
yeah, it was New York, but yes, the UCB, it had, at the time, it had outposts on both coasts, and I got improvisational training from the good people at UCB. I have a certificate saying I'm funny. I have it on my wall. UCB is a fish. I'm licensed to be funny by UCB.
That's terrific. Worked on the Hill for Tim Holden, who's an old buddy of mine, who was a Democrat from Pittsburgh. We used to play in the congressional baseball game together. And Tim actually had one of the worst moments I've ever seen because he and Bill Jefferson, another Democrat from Louisiana, who later on got sentenced to prison for racketeering, but that's an entirely different story. Tim was at first base. Bill was at catcher. Somebody popped up in the middle of the first base and home plate, and they collided head on. And Steve Largent was playing with us, former NFL football player, who said that was the ugliest collision I've ever seen, worse than anything I'd ever seen in the NFL. And they both, Tim got gashes, Jefferson got teeth knocked out, everything in the world. So now that I've completely wasted everybody's time for 8 or 9 minutes with a story that went nowhere, let's talk about your impressions of the debate. Does it really matter? Did it really change anybody's mind?
Yes, I think they do. So I was very skeptical of the debates up until about 3 months ago. I'm one of these people that is angry at the Presidential Commission on Debates, because it seemed to me that they were intentionally icing out any third party candidates that would come in, and I was ruffled about that. I was angry that Gary Johnson had approached whatever metric they needed, and then they immediately put it up to 10% in order to ice him out, and was taking the rather cynical view of like, look, everyone in America has made up their mind about Biden and Trump. This is, you know, before Biden dropped out. No one needs any additional information. It's not as if Trump is some sort of coy, opaque figure that we don't know a lot about. And I have changed my tune on that completely. I watched the debate between Biden and Trump, and I had been likewise kind of skeptical about the whole Biden mental acuity thing, because that sounded to me like kind of a made up Republican talking point. And then I, like much of the rest of the country, watched the president's brains drain out of his ears like motor oil and went, this apparently they were right about this. We have been gaslit, America. So I thought that the debate did a really good public service at that point. The most recent, so for that reason, I think the debates are good, just because they do allow you to see if somebody's truly crazy or not. I don't think that they're particularly salient for policy discussions, and the latest debate was not salient for policy discussions, but I think that they could be useful in that regard. In terms of pushing people to vote in a particular direction, yes. My understanding is that last-minute voters tend to be disproportionately affected by the personalities they see on display at the debates, and by bombardments of advertising that get them the last couple of weeks. So for most people that are plugged into politics, and I would imagine that that's the bulk of your audience, they probably have their own internal compass that they're using and some kind of metric they're using to make decisions in terms of who they're going to vote for that involves ideology and policy goals and character or something to that effect, right? I think there is a group of people, and they're ultimately who's going to determine this election, which are not nearly that attuned to politics. And so for them, they're running a lot of this off of gut feelings and vibes. And in that capacity, I think it's going to really benefit Kamala Harris, because my personal suspicion is I'm telling all the Scots while I'm here, I'm putting it 60-40 on Kamala Trump. I think she's going to take it. It's going to be razor thin, but I think that she's probably going to take it. And my rationale for this is that I think the last minute voters, they're not reliably Republican or Democrat, are going to basically go, I don't know, I associate Trump with old screamy guys. I don't like that. Let's give this new lady a try. She seems sane. And Kamala did a good job of appearing sane and reasonably normal for the course of the debate. And so I think that that vibe will work to her advantage.
So who's left that hasn't made up their mind?
I think it is the swing, like the truly swing voters, right? So like I'm an independent, and I'm a big critic of the two-party system, and I will kind of join people in breathlessly talking about how wonderful it is that independents are gaining traction and they're now the largest voting bloc. They're larger than Republicans or Democrats. But when you really look at it, the majority of independents, probably about 80%, are reliably Republican or Democratic voters, but they just really don't like the party. And so it's almost like a protest that they're registering as an independent, but they're going to vote Republican or Democrat. That leaves about 20%. And half of those people, I think, are like me, where we are very plugged in, but we have our own aberrant, weird Rorschach test that we're applying to American politics, which means we're not permanently in the pocket of either camp. But I think that there's another group of people that for them, they're living their lives and they're thinking about work and thinking about their kids. And they're not really thinking about politics. And so they're a lot more affected by how they would judge a used car salesman, which is like, does this person seem honest? Does this person seem like they're going to be the person who's going to sell me the right car? Are they going to swindle me? Can they get things done? Are they going to be a good boss? They're going with personality attributes to a great extent. And I think those are the kind of swing voters that will be swayed by the debate.
I think for folks who are political junkies, it's hard to understand. I mean, I keep running into people who say there can't be any undecided voters. They can't be, but there are. And I think people have a hard time comprehending that. And, you know, the interesting thing is if you talk to political consultants, I mean, I spent a bunch of time arguing with Mike Murphy over this idea, whether they're independents or really they're just closet Republicans or closet Democrats. If you talk to the folks at Arizona State and Tom Riley, who runs the only political science department in the country, which has a specific study of independent voters, he'll tell you there are a significant chunk. And if you look, you can see it for yourself. If you look at the vote totals in 2012, they went dramatically for Obama. Then they turned around and shifted to Trump. And then in 20, they shifted around and voted for Clinton. So I do think there's a group that is permanently disengaged with either of the major political parties. But we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, Andrew, I want to talk to you about why I think your analysis is wrong on the debate, because I want to tell you the two issues that I think are trouble for Harris.
Great.
This podcast is brought to you by the American Property Owners Alliance. We are a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization that protects property owners and their interests. Did you know that in 10 states and Washington, D.C., the government can take more than what it is owed in property taxes in the instance of a foreclosure? From 2014 to 2021, 8,600 homes and more than $780 million in savings were lost to this practice known as home equity theft. We are working to end home equity theft everywhere it remains on the books. Visit PropertyOwnersAlliance.org to join the effort to protect property rights.
The Todd Albaugh Show.
Pat Kreitlow, all your time in the media, television, radio, what have you, what was one or two of the oddest things that people were complaining about?
As a TV anchor, your hair.
You have some of the finest hair around. How could anybody criticize your hair?
Oh, well, because a consultant forced me to change it.
Were there focus groups?
I'm not aware of any focus groups other than the audience, which universally hated it. It was a bowl haircut.
The Todd Albaugh Show. Weekdays, noon till 2, on your local civic media radio station and on the app. The Dom Salvia Show.
Dr. Susan Webb Yackey, what advice would you give everyone who has an opportunity to engage in conversation with folks and sometimes we don't think alike?
One state of mind is to be curious about it. How did you come to that point of view? And the other is humility. This idea that we don't have all the answers.
The Dom Salvia Show. Weekdays from 4 till 6 on the Civic Media Radio Network and on the Civic Media app.
Well, welcome back, and we're just beginning our conversation with Andrew Heaton, who's a great political podcast host on a podcast called The Political Orphanage. He's done a lot of comedy work. He's written a whole bunch, and he and I think share a lot of sort of similar framing of how we think this election goes. So if
I'll even add to that, Scott. You were kind enough to come on my program, The Political Orphanage, and you think so similar to me that it kind of freaked me out. And at one point, I began postulating that you might be me from the future who'd come back to talk to me in the past. It was very unnerving.
Well, we can probably sell that as a pilot to CBS or somebody.
Yeah, I like that. Time-traveling pundits, yeah.
So there's sort of two framing things you have to do in elections. Well, there's actually three. I mean, if you and I are running against each other, I have to define you. Right. And then I have to define who I am. And then the third thing is you have to figure out what issues you're running on. And sometimes that's good for you and sometimes it's bad for you. And I think the problem for Harris is going to be as we get closer to those undecided voters, it's people who weren't thrilled with what the economy's looked like the last 4 years. And I think I'm not a fan of the former president, as anybody who listens to this show knows. But I just think at the end of the day, it's people who are still worried about the cost of gas, the cost of bread, about taking their kids to McDonald's, about canceling a summer vacation. I think those folks are going to look and say, wow, Trump's really a strange guy, but it was better than he was president.
That could be the case. I mean, I think one of the other things that Kamala is doing that is a strategic decision that may or may not benefit her is she's intentionally trying to remain a kind of Schrodinger's candidate, where when she ran in 2020, as Trump has pointed out multiple times, she ran as a very progressive candidate and then flamed out before Iowa. Whereas now she has tacked much more to the center and is emphatically in favor of fracking and all of the things that more centrist Democrats would favor. When I was at the Democratic National Convention last month, it was lots of really good vibes. Everybody was really happy. The AOC wing of the party was really happy with her. They were thrilled with Tim Walz. The Obama free trade wing of the party liked her. Everybody liked her. And so she had a kind of internal rationale not to cease being a quantum candidate and really define herself because she'd alienate one wing or the other. And she's kind of started doing that because she's released some policy papers, so you can now actually get a feel for what she's allegedly going to do. But I think she's kind of playing that same card at the general election. And I do think it'll help in terms of the people that are just going off of vibes because they're just going to see a fresh face and go, I don't know, let's try a new one. In terms of the economy, you might have a point there. The polls indicate that people associate Trump with a better economy. I have a lot of qualms with that in that I am very much in favor of free trade and think tariffs are stupid. So I have a lot of problems with his economic model. But that seems to be earned or unearned the benefit that he gets. He gets like a +5 in economy.
Yeah, which is interesting. And then the other issue, which isn't hot for her either, is immigration. And so that's why I think she did a marvelous job in the debate making the case for the case against the Republicans on abortion, which I thought was really the high moment of the campaign. And now let's talk about the low moment of the campaign. People eating pets and casseroles in Ohio, which seems, You know, I appreciate the fact that CBS fact checked it, but did you really need to fact check that?
All right. There's two ways we can look at American politics going forward. We can either be very sad or we can find it very funny. I've decided to find it very funny. I have decided to treat this more like a sitcom than a Black Mirror episode. And looking at it with the sitcom analysis, I thought that whole moment was very funny because the precipitating moment to that was Kamala obviously baiting Donald Trump in a way that you could see from a million miles away, where I don't remember what the actual thing they were discussing was. Probably it wasn't the border. It was something else, the economy. I don't know. And she went, I invite people to watch a Trump rally. Because what you will find is that people leave early because they find it boring and exhausting. And I saw that and I was like, there's no, like any other political candidate would go, well, that's just, you know, like that's not really pertinent to what we're discussing here. But Trump could not, like, no, in a million years, Trump cannot let that go. So he immediately had to come back with, like, our rallies are amazing. And then after that, he was so addled, that's when he stepped into the they're eating cats line. And yes, I think the weird analysis that I have been seeing of the debate is where a lot of the pro-Trump people are saying, you know, the moderators were fact-checking Trump much harder than Kamala Harris. And I'm like, yes, I agree on that. However, the whole they shouldn't have fact-checked him as hard on immigrants are eating cats line, to me, is just not a really good strategy. I'm saying, like, if only they hadn't fact-checked him on that, he'd be doing okay. I don't think so.
But the flip side of that, and I thought CBS really, or excuse me, ABC did a pretty good job and tried to balance it. And I think the mics being muted, while it didn't make for as much street theater, at least you got to hear what people were saying rather than, it's my turn to talk. But I was troubled by the fact they asked one question about her policy flips. She answered it on fracking without pushing her. And then they never went back to the other stuff, which I thought led her off far too easy. And, that bothers me. I mean, I generally, as somebody who spent 14 years in journalism, still spend lots of time on the journalism board at Northwestern University. I find a lot of the coverage, unfortunately, skewed. Do you agree with me on that?
Wholeheartedly, yes. I know you played board games when you were in high school, Scott. Did you ever play Dungeons and Dragons by chance?
I wasn't that weird. I played Risk and games in a couple
of times. Nice. I was a big Risk guy. In D&D, you've got character attributes, and you'll roll your character attributes of how strong you are and how smart you are. And in American politics, Republicans just kind of get a +5 automatically on the economy, and they get a +5 on defense. And Democrats just get like a +10 on integrity from the media. Like they just you by virtue of being a Democrat, you automatically get kind of a soft glove there. I didn't think that the moderators were in the can for Kamala. But I agree. I think generally speaking, that the people that are running those debates are probably trying to be even-handed, but they're personally very invested in Trump losing, and as a result, they're overzealous in fact-checking him. And I think that goes back to like Romney and Obama. I don't disagree with that. I think that the media scrutiny is a lot harder. It's arguably one of the benefits of Trump, because I'm also not a Trump guy, but one of the benefits of Trump is that I think he actually compels journalists to do their job. When Biden, as a turn your head and squint level journalist, like I could technically be a journalist depending on how you're looking at me. I view myself as in a positive adversarial relationship with politicians, the same way that a prosecutor is in a positive adversarial relationship with a defense attorney. There's an emergent order that comes out of the system by virtue of both parties squaring off against each other. So I don't want to take the position of just liking people in power from one side and disliking the other. I think we should always be putting pressure on them. And when Biden won the last election, the fact checker for CNN just went on vacation. And I looked at that and was like, but this is the exact time that you should be fact checking the incoming guy when he's like, this is the time to really. But the attitude was the threat is over. The threat is over. We can all go home now. And yes, I think that becomes a big problem with legacy media.
Well, and I think there's a big problem with legacy media, too, in terms of diversity. Right. You saw the big kerfuffle when one of the NPR editors quit, because when he did a check of where his fellow reporters were registered, you can do that at the political rolls in Virginia and Washington and Maryland, because it's all a public record. There were no Republicans. It was 93-0. And famously, you know, in the study that was done by Nate Silver, it was only 6% of journalists self-identified as Republicans. So not that they're making things up, but it would help if they had a little different perspective and didn't think the world would be solved by five more government programs.
You're listening to The Buzz of the North, WBZH, Hayward's home for Matt Nair on air.
ABC News, I'm Dave Packer. A judge early today implemented a temporary limit on Elon Musk and his Department of Government Efficiency's access to the U.S. Treasury Department's taxpayer records. A hearing set for next Friday. Meanwhile,
protests against Elon Musk's sweeping role in the government breaking out across the country as Musk's team gains access to at least 10 federal agencies.
ABC News senior White House correspondent Selena Wang. The wreckage of a passenger plane that went missing in Alaska now found some 34 miles southeast of Nome in the sea ice. All 10 people on board believed to be dead. Body recovery efforts are expected to begin today. In the latest ceasefire swap, Hamas releasing a new round of hostages, three men after 15 months in captivity. Dr. Hagar Mizrahi with an Israeli hospital noting that he witnessed significant weight loss that represents the severe conditions which were endured by Hamas. This is ABC News.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
It's Super Bowl Sunday tomorrow. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens reporting from Super Bowl 59 in New Orleans, where the Chiefs and the Eagles will kick off tomorrow night at 5:30. Running back Saquon Barkley had a phenomenal year for the Eagles, rushing for over 2,000 yards, and now is at his first Super Bowl. I asked him, how important is that the Eagles were here just 2 years ago?
Yeah, I think it's important for sure. Having guys like BG, Lane, Jalen, Smitty, all those guys that played in the game, but I've been playing football since I was 7, 8 years old. You know, obviously it's just on a bigger stage and, you know, it's more eyes, but it's still Seth Hutt and you got to go run the ball.
NBA, the Bucks losing last night to the Hawks in Atlanta, 115-110. The Bucks blew a 73-55 lead at the half. Damian Lillard.
We talked about at halftime how we know they, especially at home, they always seem like they come back and get in the games. You know, they play free and we needed to just stay sharp.
That's the Bucks' Damian Lillard. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
Northern Wisconsin weather. I'm Corey Hartman. Snow today and a few inches of accumulation. Highs near 23 degrees. For tonight, mostly cloudy, 5 below zero. Mostly sunny with highs in the mid-teens for Sunday. Mostly sunny, 17 on Monday. Mostly sunny and single digits Tuesday. Currently 17 degrees.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Open that conversation with this person that you disagree with so much by trying to find the shared value, the thing that you both actually agree about. Challenge yourself to keep bringing it back to the value that we agree on and maybe even the outcome that we wish to see. Go have the tough conversation because you know what gets better with practice? Those tough conversations.
The Maggie Dawn Show. Weekdays from 2 till 4 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
What's your go-to when the cold winds of winter blow? A heavy coat? A hat? For many of us, it's lip stuff, too. But did you know one of the most popular brands, Carmex, the one in the little yellow tube or tub, is a Wisconsin product? It's made in Franklin, a suburb of Milwaukee, and it's shipped to more than 60 countries every year. So can you guess the original use for Carmex? Fixing squeaky doors, actual lip balm, or to soften baseball gloves? The answer coming up. Alfred Woolwig created Carmex in the kitchen of his Dodge County home in Rubicon in 1937. He hand-poured thousands of jars until deciding to automate the manufacturing process in the 70s. Now, can you guess the original use for Carmex when it was created? More than 80 years ago. It's always been meant to be a lip balm, but people use it on other dry or itchy skin areas too. It remains a true slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
America is kept safe because the Army National Guard responds, protects, and supports our nation when it needs them most. The Army National Guard responds to disasters such as wildfires and floods. They protect us with missile defense, cybersecurity, and civilian support teams for chemical, biological, and radiological hazards. Be there for your community and your country. Visit NationalGuard.com to learn more about part-time service. Sponsored by the Wisconsin Army National Guard. Aired by the Wisconsin Broadcasters Association and this station.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
I'm Charlie Behrens. This is Civic Media. And here's my conversation with comedian and musician Bill Doucette.
I've got, you know, probably 20 tapes from like fifth grade through ninth grade. We would make, and during that time, like some of the tapes are from my Philadelphia friends. We would make like war movies.
Yeah.
In Valley Forge Park, which the park rangers love when you're running around a national park dressed as Nazis and having toy guns. By the way, we weren't all dressed as Nazis. Okay. Before this goes in a different direction, they were the bad guys and some of us were dressed as Americans.
And okay? You have to clarify that these days because there's a lot of people being like, were they that bad? No. Yeah, they were actually that bad.
My parents were not allowing us to do like a Third Reich cosplay thing. There was.
Said, we are all just prisoners here of our own desire.
master's chambers. They're gathered for the feast. They stab it with their stealing eyes, but they just can't.
Shouts and kicks in my face, but I've come through. taken my bows at my curtain calls. You brought me fame and fortune and everything that goes with it. I thank you all. But it's been no bed of roses, no pleasure cruise. I consider it a challenge before the whole human race, and I ain't gonna lose. And I need to go on, 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 on. We are the champions, my friends, and we'll keep on fighting till the end. We are the champions, we are the champions. Who tapped the losers? We are the champions of the world.
For you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
Thank you. Teachers are dynamic leaders shaping a new generation. They bring a variety of perspectives from diverse backgrounds, innovating how they teach to prepare students for our fast-changing world. They're skilled experts, discovering a universe of solutions, telling stories, inspiring, mentoring, connecting cultures, leading by example. Teaching is a journey that shapes lives. Are you ready? Explore teaching at teach.org, supported by the U.S. Department of Education and 1 million teachers of color.
At National Geographic Society, we believe in the power of wonder. It drives us to explore, pushes us to see the world differently, moves us to action. And we believe that today, wonder is more essential than ever.
Wow.
That's why we're supporting a new generation of explorers to ask big questions, make breakthroughs, and bring the future closer. Wonder awaits. Will you join us? Visit natgeo.org/wonder.
Nothing you could say could tear me away from my dog. My dog is Shallow, y'all. Hi, I'm Smokey Robinson. When you adopt a shelter pet, you not only bring joy and love into your home, you also give another animal the chance to experience that special bond. Join me in supporting American Humane Society and their incredible work to help our most vulnerable friends. Together, we can make a real difference. Donate today at AmericanHumane.org.
You're listening to The Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
Max Inc. has a super show this weekend. Join us as we welcome The Flavor That Kills, Rob Dees and the Steepwater Band. Plus, we'll talk weather with Rippyology. Saturday and Sunday evening at 6, it's Max Inc. on Civic Media. We are local music.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
There are solutions to the rot in the Supreme Court, and it's a congressional binding code of ethics. There are solutions to the corruption. It's a constitutional amendment to declare that money isn't speech and corporations aren't people, and we can do this. These are things that Americans agree on no matter our party. We all know that presidents aren't kings.
The Maggie Dawn Show. Weekdays from 2 till 4 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media... This is the Buzz of the North, WBZH 910 AM, W245 CT Hayward, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Dave Packard. A setback for the Trump administration's efforts to reshape the government. Federal judge making a move on Elon Musk's team to access U.S. Treasury data. ABC News senior White House correspondent Selena Wang.
A federal judge is temporarily restricting the access that Elon Musk's team has to Treasury Department data and payment systems, saying that this could cause irreparable harm and that it could also increase the likelihood of hacks and leaks.
An urgent search for answers after a deadly plane crash in Alaska, the aircraft disappearing from radar.
Three bodies of the 10 on board recovered. The Bering airplane took off from Unalakleet shortly after 2:30 p.m. Thursday, headed for Nome Airport. But about 40 minutes into the flight, the plane disappearing from radar.
ABC's Jacqueline Lee, Tel Aviv. 56-year-old Ohad Ben-Ami returning with his family right there in a hospital as part of the latest hostage release, one of three released by Hamas. This is ABC News. Well, how could